How did we get so far off track? When did we stop listening to and respecting each other?
I mean, what we do know that doesn't get so many clicks sometimes, right, are stories of hope and stories of humanity.
I often think that the most extraordinary people are the people whose stories are never told. And I think that's why StoryCorps really is so powerful. I'm excited to kick this episode off on a hopeful note. There's a scientific theory that says, yes, there is a way out of this political stalemate that we're living in, and it's by talking to each other. The theory is called the contact hypothesis, and it suggests that when people from different social and cultural groups repeatedly interact with each other, it reduces prejudice and promotes peace. And it's because people go from seeing each other as stereotypes to seeing them as living, breathing individuals in front of them. A Politics at Work study found that almost half of U.S. workers experience political disagreements in the workplace. As divisions deepen, businesses have a few choices. They can act as a catalyst for conversation and understanding amongst opposing sides, attempting to build bridges between people with different views of the world. Or they can stay out of it altogether, or something in between. One thing that's for sure is that there is significant debate over whether companies should involve themselves in political issues at all. Do businesses have a responsibility to foster unity within the workplace? Can the workplace become a space that brings people with diverse perspectives together for conversation? And circling back to that glimmer of hope, can a small step like a conversation actually lead to greater common ground and help companies navigate this societal and political context where issues are on our doorstep every day? I know one person who believes it and has seen it in action. My guest today is Sandra Clark, the CEO of StoryCorps. She began her career in media straight out of college as a copy editor for the Philadelphia Inquirer. She worked her way up to become the publication's managing editor. And during her tenure at the top, she led the Inquirer to a Pulitzer Prize in criticism. She went on to become vice president for news and civic dialogue at WHYY, Philadelphia's largest public media station and the home of Terry Gross and Fresh Air, and was recognized nationally for her innovative approaches to transforming the newsroom to help build trust with underrepresented communities. Now, as the CEO of StoryCorps, I sort of liken Sandra to chief librarian because she helms the largest single collection of human voices ever gathered. StoryCorps has recorded interviews with 700,000 Americans over the last 20 years. Part of their mission is to illuminate the humanity in all of us, one story at a time. If conversations can change the world, well, that's good news for podcast hosts. Sandy, thank you for being here today.
Oh, so great to be here, Sona. And boy, I love that intro. I'm inspired already.
Well, I'm really excited to talk to you. I was mentioning to you before we started that I'm really in awe of your career. My mother wanted me to be a journalist, and I didn't think I had what it took. So I have so much admiration. But I want to start with your story, Sandy. You know, you grew up in a military family with an African-American father and a Japanese mother. And it strikes me that you must have a lot of stories of your own to tell. So have you ever gone into the StoryCorps recording booth?
Well, so of course, I've been in a StoryCorps recording booth, and I've had the honor of hearing other people's stories. And I plan to take my daughter into the StoryCorps booth. We have an Airstream trailer that's crossed the country for 20 years with a soundproof booth and been in communities and that most of us will never get to for everyday people to just come and share their stories. So I am going to be signed up because this Airstream trailer is coming to Philadelphia in a few months, and I'm going to be there with my daughter.
Oh, I can't wait to hear that story.
Yeah.
I was actually just listening to a story this morning as well. Like they're so snackable and inspiring snacks. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that's the beauty of the StoryCorps stories, right? Is that they are like, you know, we doubled down a long time ago, 20 years ago. It was, you know, StoryCorps was started really collecting stories from everyday people. And And right before our eyes, there's so much wisdom and there's so much, you know, just to connect to in ways that most of us can never get to. Even today, when we have all these different ways we can connect, right, on social media. But it's ironic that we have all these different ways to connect, that we, I think, are feeling more disconnected than ever. And that's really what StoryCorps is all about. How do we connect to each other as human beings?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, we're in a loneliness epidemic. We're in a mental health crisis. And technically, we're communicating all the time. I'd love to go back to your career. So you've had a long and esteemed career in news media before you became the new CEO of StoryCorps in 2022. And so you went from, you know, telling people's stories to giving people a platform to tell their own stories. And so I'd just love to hear how you think about how that storytelling is different. How are the stories that you tell now different?
Yeah. Well, you know, I've done a lot of reflection since coming to StoryCorps about journalism versus, you know, StoryCorps. And it's not one or the other, right? That's more important. Journalism certainly has its important role. But the kinds of stories that StoryCorps collects from everyday people are the hardest things to get to in journalism. So I thought a lot about, you know, how so often when we cover these issues in journalism, you know, people are kind of forced into binary choices, right? Are you for or against the mask? Are you for or against this policy? But the actual lived experiences of, you know, everyday people tell us so much more. And it's hard to fit into a journalistic story sometimes of just hearing how someone came to think that way, what kind of life experience has informed them. So, Sonia, you started off mentioning my parents. There was a time I actually thought everyone had a Japanese mother and an African-American father. I mean, talk about the lens of a person who hadn't lived yet, right? But I think that, you know, when I think about my parents and the fact that I grew up really never seeing any representation of them in media at all, you know, you didn't see, you know, these blended families. You certainly didn't see, an African-American father, a soldier who raised the flag in front of his house every single day, even as he was not always afforded the same rights as everyone else. And you didn't see a Japanese mother who created, you know, her own form of Japan inside her home in the middle of Kansas, where my dad was stationed, and, you know, watching Japanese TV on satellite TV all day long. But also, you know, when she died, we found these slivers of paper that had these English words on it. And I realized that those were her first flashcards as she was learning to speak English in America. So, you know, these aren't people who are ever going to be in anybody's headlines. They're not the ones that people, frankly, are asking to tell their stories. And so when I think of StoryCorps, you know, we really believe and live that everyone has a story and everyone's story matters.
Yeah, I love that. You know, just even as you're telling that story, the images that come to mind, like mm-hmm. I can place myself in that living room, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's I often think that the most extraordinary people are the people whose stories are never told. And I think that's why StoryCorps really is so powerful, because, you know, going back to what you said earlier about the news, right? Like, I mean, I think a lot about the news, and I think about what drives clicks and what drives engagement. You know, I have a marketing background, and so, you know, I used to be in the business of trying to drive click throughs and all of that. And so you really realize that very provocative and actually polarizing headlines are what drive clicks. Very binary thinking drives clicks. And so, you know, we've got this perception of, you know, polarization being really high. I often wonder if it's as high as it is, because when I talk to my neighbors, that's not what I hear. But, you know, we do know polarization is really high in the U.S. right now. It's kind of frightening. It's not just the U.S. too. You know, I have to acknowledge that the U.S. is not the only one in this crisis, right? It's happening in many other democratic countries. I live in Canada, a place where I thought we were way too polite to disagree. And we're seeing that. Same with the U.K. and even India. I've got family who lives in India, and the level of polarization there is really strong. Mm-hmm. But, Coming back to the US, right? We know that there was an attempt on the former US president's life at a campaign rally in
Yes.
July just outside of Pittsburgh. And in Canada, actually, that same month, two people were charged for alleged death threats to the sitting prime minister. And so I just love your opinion as someone who has been in this in the news and journalism industry for a long time. How did we get so far off track? When did we stop listening to and respecting each other?
I think that I think there wasn't one moment, right? I mean, I think if we look at sort of the evolution, look, I have a 20-something daughter, and we're texting each other in the house, one room apart, right? And so I think that just that there's things that it's just kind of part of how we live. But obviously, what we see in media and what we do know, you come from marketing, what we do know that doesn't get so many clicks sometimes, right? Are stories of hope and stories of humanity. And as I was reflecting on journalism, you have to have both. I mean, you're covering these hard issues that are, very real. Things ha do happen in the darkness of night that most people are not aware of. But there's also people in all of our communities, in our families, and elsewhere who are, and it's these StoryCorps stories, right? I mean, thousands and thousands of StoryCorps stories are people talking about hard truths, but also how they were able to find their way back to each other, how they were able to, create these personal transformations. And it's the messages from those stories that tell us, that make people cry, that make us think like, oh my gosh, there's a pathway. We don't, I think, see nearly enough of that. Look, social, we've become a culture where we talk in sound bites, right? As opposed to really hearing context and all these kinds of important things. And leadership matters, right? And so, but we hear just across the board from all of our leaders, I think, guides us into certain spaces. And so it's a lot easier to disagree. It's a lot easier to just kind of make your opinion known without, caring where it goes. Than it is to actually lean in and walk towards someone. But here's the good news, right? Is that, and I know we're going to talk a little more about some of the work that StoryCorps is doing, to really bridge these kind of polarizing sentiments, is that what most people don't know is that you have those on the fringes who are certainly, stoking the fire, and live in it on most days. But the majority of the country and research shows, right? The majority of the company is in the middle. There's like 80 to 90% of us who really don't want these divisions, who don't feel that way day to day, who actually can say hello to our neighbors. But I don't think we know we're in the majority because it's certainly not what we see.
Yeah, I think that's exactly true. And actually, Jonathan Haidt wrote a piece basically just saying like we're in this, time of Babel, and actually the extremes are getting amplified through social media because of algorithms. But the moderate middle has dropped out. They're silent. But and that's kind of why I say like when I go out on my front steps and I talk to my neighbors, there's so much more agreement than you perceive. And so if you the more time you are spending on your devices and the more time you're consuming news, the perception is that we're divided, and then you carry that into the real world. And I think you have to be super open to to being wrong about that, and actually
No, I think perceptual polarization, as you were talking about, someone is real, right? And so is and really what that is that if you think someone's bad, you think they're way worse than they really are, right? And so and again, there's all kinds of data around this that, like more 80% of Democrats and Republicans see the other side. And again, these are the people on the extremes, not the ones who are sort of in this, I sometimes call the exhausted mi middle, but as you see, the other side is even more hateful than they are. It's just that you're brainwashed. I, have to say that, and sadly, right, I was not surprised by the violence that broke out. And because all, studies are showing that more and more Americans are kind of, and I think this is as we lose kind of faith in sometimes in our, it's certainly in our institutions, but also in each other. That more and more people are thinking you have to resort to violence to save the country, right? And that number seems to have gone up. And so, people think there's going to be another civil war in our lifetime. I mean, there's all these kind of extreme sentiments that happen. But like you said, day to day, that's not how most of us are living. And so the work with StoryCorps from 20 years, just, you know, in crossing the country and collecting stories, but also in this work we're doing right now, is to give people a place to go who don't feel that way and who really want to, you know, not just fight for the country, but fight for each other.
I love that. And I it's actually kind of a great positioning statement, which is, you know, StoryCorps is for the exhausted middle to be re-energized, right? And to find their hope.
Yeah. They need a exhausted middle needs a voice in all ways, right? And that's where our North Star is StoryCorps helps people believe in each other by illuminating the humanity and possibility in us all one story at a time. And that lean in on believing in each other has come from people who for 20 years have told us that's what being able to sit across from each other and have a conversation has shown them.
Well, yeah. And so that leads right into the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, which was your program called One Small Step. And it's so interesting to me because essentially it takes two people with different political views, puts them together for a 50-minute conversation, but they don't actually debate politics. The point of these conversations is simply to get to know each other as fellow human beings. So to give our listeners an example, I'll share one of my favorite StoryCorps stories. So two gray-haired men sitting together in Columbus, Georgia. One is the former president of the NAACP, which stands for the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And the other is former chair of the local Republican Party. The men, so Wayne Hales and Alton Russell, end up chatting about their first jobs, meeting a yet-to-be president in their youth, and chuckling over formative memories from quite divisive times in their pasts. And at the end, they genuinely agreed that the conversation was eye-opening. And you hear Wayne say, "The other guy ain't that bad," which is actually really profound.
Yeah.
So in any other context, you'd never think these two guys could emerge from a conversation this way. And so how is this possible? Like, what are they doing that we can learn from, Sandy?
Here's what we can say about Wayne and Alton is that, and this is some of our One Small Step work in Columbus, Georgia. So, you know, these are two guys who have lived in this community for a long time, who have sort of, you know, never sat down for a conversation, didn't trust each other, you know, or on opposite sides. And so when we started One Small Step in Columbus, you know, we heard about them from one of our field organizers. We have field coordinators who work within communities. And you know, the whole point is like, how do you bring people to the table, have these conversations, and they know the communities that they live in. And so they told us about Wayne and Alton. And at first there was some serious hesitancy. One of our staff at StoryCorps, you know, called Wayne and said, you know, hey, you know, let's talk about why you might be hesitant to have this conversation. So eventually they end up, at the table together. And they are able to have a conversation, not just about, you know, they're on different sides. That is just the what, right? They started to share more about their lives, started to share, Wayne shared that he became involved with the NAACP when his family was denied the right to use a laundromat. And the NAACP got involved, and all of a sudden the laundromat person calls them and says, you know, come back. And they show up and there they were, right? And Alton is sharing a story about, you know, how he's a toilet paper salesman. And at the same time, you know, he became, you know, a part of the local Republican Party as the chair, and how he, a Republican came up to him and told him, you know, how can you sit with that Black man? And he says, that person's a friend of mine. You know, you are so wrong. They would never have been able to share this experience with each other. And that's the thing about a StoryCorps conversation when you're talking about each other as human beings first, is that these are stories that defy stereotype. These are stories that reveal something that most of us would never see in each other without a conversation. And these are stories that leave us thinking like, oh my gosh, like you, as you said, Sona, you know, you're not so bad. You know, there is a way for us to sit down and have a conversation. And people in the community, I remember when we rolled this, there's a version on YouTube, and it'll be on your website as well. And where people saw the two of them together. They were there in person as ambassadors for One Small Step, really modeling this. How do we sit across from each other? Can we have a conversation? Yes, we can. How can we learn something about each other? And can we even work together at some point to really improve our communities?
Yeah, it's so true. Actually, the power of seeing it is helpful in going, yeah, maybe I could do that thing that I would never thought of. You know, if they can do it, maybe I can do it in a small
yes.
way.
Yeah, that's right where our data shows us, right? Is that one thing StoryCorps is able to do from a very small portion of these conversations that now more than 5,000 Americans have had with each other through One Small Step, is that we are able to take out excerpts from them, play them back on as part of a, you know, local marketing campaign. And by the way, we just went national a few weeks ago. And so you'll start seeing billboards and other things. And it is that being able to see someone else do it, knowing that, you know, you don't want to live in a nation that is about polarization and you want to take that one small step. The beauty of a name, One Small Step, is that it is achievable by everyone. And so there's an opportunity now for everyone to have a one small step conversation.
100%, Sandy. I think sometimes it's really easy to get overwhelmed by the magnitude of the problems we're facing, whether it's, you know, climate, war and conflict, all of those, like, and you feel helpless. But there really is, you know, one small step that's available to all of us. And I think, you know, this is, I mean, one of our core beliefs at Benevity is that every single action can make a significant difference. In fact, it's the only way cultural change happens is if each one of us actually takes an action.
Yeah, that's right. And it can't be too big, right? I mean, we're all busy people. Things are scary, right? But this is a simple step that so many already have taken.
Well, it does give me a little bit of, I don't know, a comfort, I guess, that the conversation had to be engineered and Alton and Wayne also had their own, you know, it's very human to have those hesitations. So it's, you know, sometimes we put these people on pedestals like they can do these things. It's so easy. And it's like, no, actually, it's hard. It's hard for the best of us.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, actually, when we launched the beauty of having Alton and Wayne there, and they're so wonderful, is that a lot of people ask them questions like, weren't you scared? You know, what made you do it? And just being able to kind of have that thing that sort of addresses our fears. And then we realize, well, what are we afraid of? Nothing. Right. And so it I think it made it possible for others to participate, too.
Yeah. And I think about, you know, what you said about it's unlikely that they would have just naturally ended up maybe in the same place. Right. Like they had to be brought together. And that's true for our own lives. Right. Our own circles tend to reflect our own demographics. We have fairly you know, homogenous social circles. And so we have, you know, very similar people, whether it's, you know, economic class or profession or race or ethnicity or religion, right? We often end up in places and spaces with people who are more like us than different. And I think, you know, after the last number of years, we've also, a lot of people have like removed people from their lives who are different than them, right? Which I think in further exacerbates the sense of other. So, you know, when I think about many people not having people in their social groups who are, you know, might have different political affiliations or come from different races, religions, ethnic backgrounds, I think about the power of business, right? Because business, in business, a bunch of different people are essentially thrown together and expected to work together without conflict. And so there's more diversity typically in our workplaces than there are in our personal spaces. So I see workplaces as a place where we can learn about diverse perspectives and appreciate differences. And actually, I'm not alone in this sentiment. Our own research at Benevity has found that 93% of corporate social responsibility leaders believe that business should act as a unifying force for humanity. But, you know, I know that there's other folks out there who maybe aren't as optimistic as we are. So I am curious, Sandra, about what you think the role of business is in this context. Do they have a role to play in bridging the divides? Should they just stick to business? What would your guidance or perspective be?
I think, you know, we know that this has to be a careful walk. I mean, you know, there's businesses that have leaned in really hard one way or the other, and probably without the highest credibility and authenticity to do that work, or let alone the knowledge and training. So it is, it's not that there isn't some peril to it. At the same time, I don't think business and bridging divides are two separate things, and they can't be. Like, that is part, that should be part of your business culture, right? Is first of all, recognizing the diversity of your staff in all these different ways. And part of this, by the way, we do a lot of work with businesses, you know, with corporations and organizations, to help draw up employees' own stories that most businesses don't know about, right? And so you don't even actually know who your workforce is. I mean, you know the tasks, you know the jobs that they have to do, but who are the people, right? And when I first came to StoryCorps 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, the first thing I did, one of the first things I did was one-on-ones with everybody on staff. And so I got to know something about them in a more personal kind of way. I mean, I never got to meet a CEO when I was, when I was coming up, no one ever asked me about me. And I thought I learned as much about, people as I did about the organization that I was now at the helm of. I think it's a priority for us to think about ways, first of all, to know who our workforce is. But also, I think we get more from them in terms of, the success of our business. But we also just, we're creating a culture that, should be replicated in the rest of the world. I'm very lucky to be at StoryCorps in the sense that that is what we do, right? Human connection is what we do, not to say that. And by the way, that means there's even more pressure on us to do it right, because if that is our mission, then we better live it. But we also have challenged our staff to, come out of their silos. And, when you hear things like, are you a fit? Well, what does that mean exactly? And we should have this real mix of people, both, in terms of politics, in terms of geography, it's all these kinds of things that make for the best businesses.
Yeah. I mean, I love how you really did just live the values right from, the first moment. And I'm kind of reflecting on what you said, Sandy, and thinking about some of the moments that I've experienced over the last few years, especially as employee resource groups actually have started to organize events. And they tend to be very anchored around storytelling of people's personal lives. And I can't tell you the number of stories I've heard of our own people at our company sharing pretty personal, anecdotes or experiences, and how much you learn about their strengths, their resilience, what they've come through, or like what it's like to be a part of that community. And I'm reflecting on some examples from our Pan-Asian group and our Pride group. And you just, the level of respect that goes up, because you're just like, I didn't even think about the challenges that you face day to day. I'm actually struck by, thinking about how companies can actually scale that through things like employee resource groups or, that personal storytelling. And I'm glad to hear StoryCorps does think about the, helping businesses tell those stories, because I will say that those are some of the most profound moments of connection I've had in this world where we don't feel connected.
Yeah, that's right. And again, we're, often not seen, heard. I mean, I think about how you mentioned I was started as a copy editor and became a managing editor, but part of, and by the way, all of it was accidental. There was no plan. And I was this, very uncomfortable public speaker. I was like a geeky kind of kid. And so there's nothing that told me I was going to do that. But really, that career happened because I started paying attention to parts of the organization that no one paid attention to, that not the stars. It was the people who were really very dedicated, committed, had more ideas than any they ever got a chance to share. And so when I think about that, I think about that's really how my career became what it was paying attention to all those whose stories we never got to hear.
Well, I mean, we could do a whole conversation probably just on your career I love it when I hear women like you who are in such esteemed roles, right? Roles that a lot of people look up to and say, I didn't have a plan. I just loved what I did. I saw things, I did things, because I didn't have a plan
Yeah.
either. And I think people are so surprised by that.
Yeah. Yeah. But there is something about that, right? Is that, at some point you just kind of figure out where you're supposed to be and how you align who you are personally with, and it's not that there aren't challenges. We're not trying to sugarcoat anything, but I didn't I certainly didn't sit there and write a script.
So I want to come back to this this idea of politics, right? So more and more businesses have bought into this idea that they have a responsibility to make a positive impact on the world. You were kind of alluding to that earlier, Sandy, and many have I think fostered these grassroots storytelling sessions through employee resource groups or events or whatnot. But many have also waded into politics and other divisive issues fairly directly, trying to unify people and make a difference. So I think about Starbucks's 2015 campaign, Race Together, which had the intention to spark a national conversation about race relations. But the social media backlash was fierce and the company was faced with a lot of negative attention. And then in contrast, Levi Strauss's 2018 Use Your Vote campaign, which feels relevant right now, that was very well received and likely played a small part in record youth turnout for the 2018 midterm election. And so I'm curious about how companies can engage constructively in this time. What makes some of these actions or campaigns more successful than others?
Well, that's a big question because, I'm sure if we looked at sort of how each of those companies approached it, I think without question, right, authenticity and feeling like it's you're not doing something because it's a moment, but it's a value that your organization has, and being able to articulate that well really helps. And it's not just from leadership; it's from really listening to what staff is saying too. We're in a generational shift in terms of our workforce as well, and there's an expectation of leadership that's really different than when I was coming up, right? And you can't fake it. There's no way of just saying stuff without. And by the way, we're also as we all know, in the age of social media, so it's not very forgiving. So even for those organizations that have the best intentions, one little thing can derail it all. And so there's just this really, delicate convergence of so many different kinds of things. I think the best ambassadors are the people who are here. It's, while leadership can support many things, and we have to, sort of set the stage for how we think the organization should be. But at the same time, it's the people who are actually in your organization who are living it in all these different kinds of ways. Those are the stories, I think. Storytelling is such a key piece of this, right? And I think that that's the thing that I think we should. I grew up, in journalism, you had to be so agnostic. You had to be so objective about everything. You were agnostic and you can barely be a citizen, right? You almost had to hide your citizenry. Which is something we can, that's a whole nother podcast too. But so at StoryCorps, I mean, we have people who go really feel strongly about working at the polls, and kind of doing things at the local level. And so, however, I think we can support those kind of efforts, and it doesn't always have to be starting with the organization, it's starting with the people and what they're already doing.
Yeah, very kind of inside out, bottoms up. I like that. So storytellers, you're a storyteller at heart, and we know that humans are hardwired to learn through stories. I'm curious about what you think about what businesses can learn from storytelling in terms of building culture inside their companies or even out in the world.
If you don't have a good story to tell, then you've got a problem. So I think it's really thinking about the stories that we that the story that we want to tell, right? But I think that it's storytelling and it's also listening. We talk a lot about the stories at StoryCorps, but really what makes them so incredibly powerful is the listening that happens. And so if you listen to any StoryCorps story, whether it's produced or not, and we've got hundreds and thousands of them available in our archives and on our website, you're going to hear what you're going to feel is the actual listening almost as much as you feel the story. And there's actually neuroscience behind all of this, right? Is that, you know, when somebody is telling a story, there's something that chemically is happening in their brain about the kind of thing that they want you to take away from it. And then as you're listening to a story, your brain is actually, you know, in that same neural pattern. And that's what allows you to leave that story feeling empathy, for example, right? And so as important as the storytelling is the listening part of it, and what are we listening for? And you know, listening is actually harder than telling stories sometimes. One of the workshops that we do with organizations is about the power of listening. We bring them in the storytelling, but what they always leave saying is, oh my God, listening was so much harder than telling the story. And that's what draws up the best possible stories.
So I did not expect that to be your answer, but I think that is so wise. And it just makes so much sense. And I can totally relate to the telling is easy, the listening is actually hard, but that's actually where good stories and change probably start. So I'm so grateful for that gift that you just gave us, Sandy. I think I really think the world could actually, you know, we're living in a world of telling, not listening. Yeah. And I think that's powerful.
And it's that space that gives us space to absorb. Right. And so, you know, we can kind of do this rapid fire sort of thing. And let me ask you, you know, but I think it's just giving us that space to breathe and to actually soak up what the storytelling is and what we're taking away from it that then connects back to our own lives in some kind of way.
Yeah. Well, thank you. This has been a phenomenal conversation. I think more businesses could be thinking about hosting more listening sessions as well. So it's a great takeaway. Thank you so much, Sandy. This has just given me that jolt of inspiration. And I think, you know, a time of high anxiety for all of us, where we're sitting in these times of division and polarization. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity just to have a conversation and to be able to take away some of these learnings and remind ourselves that there is something in our grasp. We can take one small step and that it really starts with listening. So thank you. And thank you for all the work that StoryCorps is doing.
Oh my gosh. Thank you, you know, for the opportunity to be in conversation with you. And by the way, if anyone wants to do a one small step conversation, they can go to takeonesmallstep.org and sign up and let's do this. I mean, this is people power here.
Absolutely. We'll include a link in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sandy.
Thank you, Sona. Great to see you.